Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of the Wednesday night live stream with Owen Texas Football. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel. He's the man in the know. And thank you guys for all joining us. We appreciate you. Yeah, welcome to you all. We appreciate all of your participation on the show. Remember, super chats always jump to the front of the line. You can disrupt the show at any time. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can. We got a couple of recruiting nuggets, transfer portal related, that we'll start out with my man CJ, and then we'll dive into some of the topics. My man Sark actually spoke. Steve Sarkisian spoke at the Touchdown Club in H-Town, my hometown, today. So there's a lot of buzz, a lot of quotes coming out from his time there talking to the Longhorns down there in Houston. So we'll review some of that. I thought they were pretty interesting. We'll get into some of that as well. We'll also get into Bill Connolly's returning production rankings. He does this every year, and usually you think when the Longhorns have a record number of players drafted, like 11 players drafted, that hey, maybe they actually may be at the bottom of those returning production rankings. That is not the case at all. So we'll dive into that. A lot of Longhorn football conversation. Thank you guys for joining us. Oh, yeah, Marion, Arkansas, love that. Hey, love and this Owen Texas football family, the community, CJ, it's large, man. It's big. It's all
everywhere.
It's expansive. It's everywhere. It's international. We get a lot of shout-outs internationally, too. So we really appreciate it, man. We're trying to build a family, a community. It's all of us in this thing together, because we all Longhorn fans. We love Texas. We love the brand. We want what's best for the brand, and we want to bring you the best coverage. And that's why CJ Vogel joined the team, because he was already at the top of his game. So we had to bring him in. And CJ, I can't wait to get your thoughts today about what's happening in the transfer portal. It giveth and it taketh away. Texas had their ninth transfer portal departure with Kendrick Blackshear. I don't think that's anything that Longhorn fans are concerned about, but there are some transfer portal targets that Longhorn fans are concerned about. Dominique Williams, I think, is at the top of that list. He's the defensive lineman from TCU, freshman All-American. As you point out, this guy has a Sunday skill set. He's got an NFL ceiling. What's the latest on Dominique Williams?
Yeah, of course, just left TCU earlier this afternoon. Just left LSU to get back up home earlier this afternoon. Of course, left TCU to enter the portal. Took four visits to Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, and LSU. Now, of course, look at that, Tokyo, Japan.
Tokyo, Japan, baby.
That's big time right there. I don't even know what – it's got to be early morning up there, huh?
Hey, I'm not going to do the math. We appreciate you, though. Much love.
On the way to work. I know.
There you go.
But to Dominique Williams, of course, just left LSU, headed back home up to the Dallas area. Kenny Baker wanted to get a last-minute meeting with him, of course, prior to the visit or prior to his decision, which I expect to come tomorrow morning or afternoon, sometime in that time frame. Regardless, the decision will come down tomorrow. I don't expect Missouri to be a big factor in this indecision. Oklahoma feels confident. Of course, Bo Davis and LSU now feel confident, and Texas felt good about their visit. Of course, bringing up the Lamborghinis, going to Vince Young Steakhouse, Sarkisian, and the staff. I mean, they rolled out the red carpet for them, as they should. Those interior defensive linemen that can be instant impact guys, you don't see them all too often. So when you get an opportunity to add them to your roster, you got to do everything that you can. He's a great player who will be starting at any place that he ends up. Snap count won't be an issue. But right now, if I were to tell you anybody has the leg up right now, I'd be lying to you. And I think most people who try to give you a guesstimation on where things are leaning right now, I'm not sure that they have a real strong guess at the moment. That might change here in the next couple hours. And, of course, tomorrow morning as new intel kind of unveils itself. But right now they're keeping all of that leaning one side to another. They're standing up straight, basically. They're not giving anybody an idea of where this one might go. So three schools really fighting for him. That's Oklahoma, LSU, and Texas. That's Dominique Williams, the TCU defensive lineman, right now. And, of course, Texas will be hosting Javion Cole, the San Jose State cornerback, 5'11 cornerback, for a visit tomorrow morning. That will range all the way into the evening as well. Talented cornerback, 10-6 speed out of the Oakland Athletic League out of high school. Spent a year at Cal Poly and then up to San Jose State before entering the portal again. This is a talented football player. I know he played at some lower levels, but should he end up at Texas, go back and watch the tape. This is a guy that you'll see on the field quite a bit if he ends up here in the burnt orange. We'll see again just how these visits go after his time on campus tomorrow afternoon.
It's interesting because, first of all, I gotta get back to the Lamborghini thing. Can we talk about this just for a second? the Lamborghini that he got a chance to drive as a rental. How do you rent a Lamborghini for somebody else? It's hard enough to rent. So maybe did they rent the Lamborghini from a company, or is this somebody like a booster or a donor's private Lamborghini? And they just, hey, man, can we borrow your Lamborghini to let this Dominique Williams drive around? Because he's young. First of all, how old are you, CJ?
I'm 26.
Okay.
So I can barely rent a car.
Yes. Okay. That's the whole point of it. You can barely rent a car, right, at 25. He's not 25 yet. So how do you rent a Lamborghini for somebody else? Something tells me that's not a rented Lamborghini. It's a private Lamborghini from a booster or donor. They were like, hey, man, can we borrow your Lamborghini for this young man? He's like, cool. It's all good. Because what about the insurance? How does that work?
Bro, you know what it's got to be? It's got to be whenever you call, you know, you get on Uber or whatever, and you lift up and it's like, all right, Uber X, Uber XL. We got, you know, the Uber Black for the big ones. This has got to be Uber Texas unofficial visitor, because you're going all the way down and seeing Lamborghinis. You're going straight. There's probably two destinations, probably three. It's from the Four Seasons where he was staying. You can go to one, two, or three. Two takes you to Vince Young's. Three takes you to Sarkeesian's office. Three takes you back home to the Four Seasons. That's the only options you got, and it's Uber Lamborghini Texas Visit Edition. Able for these guys who are on campus. I'm sure Javion Cole will get a similar layout as well tomorrow when he's checking out the 40 acres. But, man, you picked the wrong time to be a good athlete, Rod. I'll tell you that.
First of all, how does the Lamborghini not swing it? He's still undecided. It's like, hold up, did you get the Lamborghini treatment at LSU? Maybe he did. Did you get the Lamborghini treatment at Oklahoma? Maybe he did. I'm like, man, that should have swung it. Because when they brought us in, we did not stay. I don't think we stayed at the Four Seasons when we brought us in for a visit. There's no way. Someone says Turo has daily rentals, but he get $800 a day for his Cybertruck. See, that's good. My point is, but how do you rent it for somebody else?
Like that's a good question.
You know what I mean? You rent it. They like, hey, you rent it. You driving, because you're taking all the liability, and it's going to be your responsibility. How do you say, like, no, I'm going to have this 20-year-old driving? Is he old enough to drink?
Matthew, can you pull up Dominique Williams' own Twitter? He had his LSU visit. Rod, I want to see your thoughts on this, because they brought up the bottle girls welcoming him to Baton Rouge for dinner. So I liked it. It's a little bit different than what Texas did, of course, with the steakhouse and the Lamborghini. But everybody's got their own, you know, kind of twists and turns when it comes to recruiting the big guys. Yeah. Of course, I saw the comment. Let's see, where'd it go? Yeah, how are Texas Bad Boy? How are these guys still up for grabs? You can enter the portal up to yesterday, up until 11:59 last night. It takes about a day or two before all the finalized papers get up into the transfer portal. But yes, look at that. There we go. I mean,
I'm sure they
like it. You know, I can't.
That's
tell.
Impressive. That's impressive too. But like I said, man, it's amazing the stuff they can do now in these recruiting visits. That you said, I was born at the wrong time. I'm a little jealous. That's all it is. I'm just envious, man, of these young guys. That's all.
It's wild. It's cool seeing them document the visits. You don't normally see that with a lot of big time recruits. Of course, everything's behind the scenes. Yep. You know, it's only for the guys that are supposed to be on the trip to experience, of course. But I love when you come away with the TikToks and the videos, the Instagram stories, whatever it might be, that kind of show behind the curtains a little bit of what happens on these visits. But that's a new one for me, is the bottle service and the big signs and the flares. I'm a fan.
Yeah, like I said, I just don't know how to. My guess would be that Lamborghini is from a private booster at Doma. That you don't want to go through all the red tape of the. Now Texas is big time enough. They probably put down literally enough cash and be like, listen, we'll take responsibility if something happens to the Lambo, if he wrecks it or something. But my guess would be, to get past all that, private booster or donor, they got a Lamborghini. Hey man, can we borrow your Lambo for a little while? Fine, cool, let's do it. And if you're, I'm with you. If I'm what's the young man coming in, Javion Cole? Yep. If I'm Javion Cole and I don't get a Lambo, I'm be like, hey, y'all, so y'all don't want me as bad, obviously. I didn't get the Lambo. I got a Ferrari. Like, well, you know what I mean? That would actually, that's a standard you said about how impressive, or at least how much you want to impress a young prospect coming in. So anyway, like I said, I'm just jealous. All right, let's get back to the DBs, because you said you got Javion Cole coming in and there aren't any other rumors about anybody else about that they're interested in a targeting. Sark was talking to the Touchdown Club in Houston, And he was, remember, and I said this after the spring game. At the spring game, Sark wasn't concerned about the DBs. He wasn't. He first thing he started doing, he was like Suge Knight up there talking about come to death row. He's like, hey, I need big humans. We need big humans on the D-line. That's what we need. And he basically put out a call to arms, like, hey, come here. We need big D-linemen. And, you know, Texas, we can obviously pay the NIL, and we're going to compete for championships. He didn't say anything about the defensive backs. Didn't complain about them. Didn't talk about them. And I said that was peculiar, considering they just got torched for, like, what, 700-something yards in the spring game. So he was asked about the DBs again at the in H-Town, the touchdown club. And once again, he's confident in his DBs. He said, we're going to be just fine in the secondary. I think we got a lot of versatility back there. And he started mentioning a lot of the guys of versatility. But he went on to say that our defensive backfield is probably the most versatile as we've had it in my time here, and probably the most talented defensive backfield that we've had in our time here at Texas. Shout out to Jason Bristow over at KHOU in H-Town, covering that and throwing some of those quotes out there via Twitter. But what are your thoughts? Sark is not concerned about the DBs. That gives me confidence that this turnaround in the defensive backfield is, you know, something that is a lot more promising. I should be a lot more optimistic about, because as I've said many times, that it's the only area of this football team. It's the only, you know, position group, the defensive backfield, that hasn't really improved since Sark's been here. Every other group has documented progress since he's been here. And that group really hasn't. Even statistically, it really hasn't. And it's really a talented group. And it may confirm one of my other theories about this roster construction with Sark, that this was the last phase of roster construction, that they put it off to the end. That's why you had five DBs in this last recruiting class. You brought in Makuba the sixth. You're just starting to get those young guys like Malik Muhammad, like a Derek Williams. They're just starting to kind of revamp that secondary and starting to ascend themselves. So maybe that's why he's a little bit more patient with that secondary, because he knows, no, first of all, we were a little bit in our, as the coaches, we were, you know, hesitant to rebuild there first. We wanted to rebuild on offense and other places, and then we saved it for our last, you know, phase of roster construction. And also, he believes now they do have the talent to turn it around. And I've said this is a big year for the coaches, for Coach Gideon and Coach Joseph, but also for those guys in the defensive backfield. I think there may be extreme changes back there if this group doesn't take a step this next season.
Yeah, and I think you're right. To Sark's point about how the depth, I think they have a lot of top-end guys ready to roll, specifically at the safety spot. Of course, you add Andrew Makuba, Jelani McDonald emerges as a year or two guy. We know what Michael Taft and Derek Williams can do, but now getting Jahdae Barron back healthy, you get Jalen Gilbo back healthy. You know, I think your star and your safety spots are locked up. Manny Muhammad's going to be your guy for one of those cornerback positions. And do you have enough trust in Warren Roberson or Gavin Holmes right now to man the other one? Of course, Texas is still hosting Javion Cole for a visit tomorrow. They're still looking for another cornerback to kind of help, you know, fill the gap from what left them with Terrence Brooks and his 19 starts. I know Austin Jordan was more of a rotational special teams guy, but he was certainly a guy that was, at this point in his career, you would expect for him to play a series or two and not have significant drop off. He played in, I have it here, 23 or 25 career games. Those aren't starts, and I know he was limited in his rotational time on the field on the defensive side of the ball. But still, at that age, being one of the older guys in the room, you rely on that. So what does that mean now? Well, Texas has a lot of older pieces, yet they're still very young. You know, it's a lot of guys who've been on the field for a lot of snaps, Michael Taft, Andrew Makuba, Jahdae Barron, and you can even count Manny Muhammad and Derek Williams for their time in the back half of 2023. They were starting guys as freshmen for the Texas Longhorns in 2023. Now that they've had a full spring under their belt as starters, it should be a little bit different than your average true sophomore going into the SEC. But you still have that other cornerback spot right now, and I know that Gavin Holmes got a lot of run there in the spring, but do you see Jahdae Barron go out wide? What's that rotation look like? Who right now is your first, or I guess your second starting cornerback opposite of Manny Muhammad. I'm not sure they have that answer on the roster at the moment. And I think that's why you're seeing them bring in Javion Cole, who, as I mentioned earlier, very talented cornerback, would be starting, or let me back up. He would be contributing to a very healthy amount of snaps for the Longhorns in 2024, should he end up in Austin. Very talented football player. So if that's your rotation, do you feel good about your secondary still? Well, I know an answer to that is to shore up that defensive line, specifically in the middle, because that complementary factor on the defense will definitely help some inexperience that you might have as you're at your cornerback position. Regardless, though, safety should be much improved than what they were a year ago.
Yeah, if you look at what the last two acquisition cycles, that's kind of what I call it now, if you're looking at the transfer portal and the windows, they have six DBs in the previous cycle that they lost, five of those for safeties. You have two here. I mean, you think about it, that's eight defensive backs total. Eight DBs you've lost now in the last two transfer portal cycles. That's a lot of DBs. Some of those guys were starters for you. I think three starters, basically, right? You lost Jaron Thompson, who's a starter for you. Who else? Terrence Brooks, obviously, another guy that was a starter for you. So you've lost some starters with that group, but I mean, this is the time now. I mean, they have now the guys they want. Jadae Barron is a star back there. Makuba is a veteran who's played a lot of football at a high level. You do have Malik Muhammad, and he's expected to be a rising star in his secondary. Your frontline guys are fine. I think the depth is what they're worried about. You got to find an answer for the cornerback spot opposite Malik Muhammad. But the depth is the concern in the secondary right now, because I think that's what he's also confident in, is the guys that'll be your mainline starters who will play 70% of the snaps. But even Sark said, and just talking about the touchdown club comments that he made, he talked about how they're going to have to play a lot of guys. He said that Texas wants to accomplish its goals of surviving a 2024 season and playing on January 20th. Texas will need to play the bulk of its roster over the first four non-conference games of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he wants to play 85% bulk of it. To me, bulk would mean most of it. That's at least 75% of the roster he wants to be able to play in the first four games. And then I think they're going to judge who has earned the trust to be their rotational guys once the season actually starts. But, hell, you got Michigan in those non-conference games too. I mean, this non-conference games won't be just a pushover and a joke. So, it'll be interesting. But they're going to play a lot. They want to play a lot of guys. That's the key to the – secondary, is that it's not just a front line guys. The backups have to be adequate as well.
They're going to have to be. And, of course, having that fourth non-conference game in this sense, it certainly helps the Longhorns, you know, because Texas doesn't have to play nine conference games this year. They get to add another non-conference game, a GF5 game, which they normally would not have had. It gives you an extra opportunity to keep that rotation heavy before going into the SEC, and also allows you to try different things with different personnel. I think it's really important this year because, again, going into the SEC is a little bit of a different animal. Of course, week two is going to come very quickly. And they're going to have an understanding of which guys are their guys that are going to play the bulk of their 75 or 80% of snaps before they go into the big house. That's going to be a big test. And I'm sure right now, just about every position on both sides of the ball is locked up for what you can expect that group to be. Of course, your interior lineup and your cornerback group might be a little confusing at the moment, but that's also what week one, week three, and week four are before Mississippi State comes to town for the beginning of SEC play. And then you really got to figure things out, because then you got Oklahoma and Georgia right after that in consecutive weeks. Got to be able to have those guys understand the rotations, understand their roles, understand the personnel that you can deploy at certain situations. But right now, that rotation is not going to go away anytime soon. And luckily for Texas, that depth has built up so much over the last 2 years that you can allow – I mean, that's perfectly okay, as long as you understand who your top-end guy is.
CJ might have froze on us. Uh-oh. There are some thunderstorms here in Austin, so it's possible, man, CJ got that the lights went out on us, or electricity went out or something, because it's thundering right where I'm at. So we apologize for the technical difficulties. All right, but getting back to it, the DBs, I'll say this, and Sark also said this when he was asked about the DBs getting beat. Yep, he just said he had a power surge. He'll be back. he said, this is about the spring game. He said, I saw Kelvin Banks get beat too. He's going to be just fine. We're going to be fine talking about that cornerback. So when he was asked about cornerbacks getting beat in the spring game, he said, I saw Kelvin Banks get beat too. Hey, we're going to be just fine at cornerback. He's going to be just fine. So Sark is confident in those DBs. He sees them every day in practice. His confidence gives me confidence that the DBs are going to be just fine. I worry about the depth of it. And I think you're going to need one of those young guys to step up. That's number one. And maybe it's Jalen Gilboa. He's not a young guy, but he's someone who hasn't necessarily contributed a lot because of injuries, because he's been down the depth chart. So you get somebody to step up that you didn't anticipate, and it can add some new depth. And Sark, even in those comments we just read, he talks about the versatility. Remember, I've been talking a lot about that, right? It's the word of the offseason for Texas defensively, versatility, because that manufactures depth, and it gives you options and solutions as a defensive coordinator, whether it be moving guys around, whether it be matching up better with opponents, and whether it be when injuries happen, you can, you know, manufacture that depth. A lot of reasons for it. And you do have versatile pieces. You got Jadae Barron, you got Makuba, you got Jalen Gilboa, who can move around too. So I think they're okay, but the depth, and I'll give you, when I was, you know, charting the spring game, you know, the depth is basically what was tested in the spring game, because you had a lot of young guys playing. Jadae Barron didn't even play. And that is what I think they need to get up to speed quickly. The young guys, like, you know, if you're going to a Kobe Black and a Phil Samee and, you know, a Jordan Johnson, Rubel and Wardell McKenzie, which one of those young guys you think you can push that may provide you with some depth this season? The frontline guys may just need to play more. It could be that's the solution right there. Like, listen, we're not going to rotate as much. We're going to rotate, keep you fresh. We'll figure out
the situation. I would love that.
Right? And just say, you know what? We're not going to rotate as much, CJ. Like, period. We just don't have that luxury. When we have an injury, then we'll adapt. But right now, frontline guys, you were playing 65% of snaps. Now you're going to play close to 75, maybe even 80% of snaps, depending on the game. And if the game is out of reach, then maybe we can do something different. I'll give you a stat here that my man Westcott Ebert threw out there that I thought was really interesting. If you go look at the amount of basically plays where the Texas secondary had to play with a lead and how often they faced passing attempts with a lead. Texas, with a lead as compared to when they were trailing. Texas, according to his stat, faced 42 passing attempts while trailing the entire 2023 season. While trailing. That is a number I think that needs to be addressed too, because I think that needs to be what we know about Sark. See, my man, CJ's got another surge, another power surge. I might get one too, because it's thunder and lightning. I'm going to try to stay strong. But what we know about Sark's offense is that Sark's offense, hell, forget it. Let's keep it. Sark's offense surges. No, sorry, CJ. Sark's offense surges too. Like, Sark's offense is built on spurts. It's always runs like the NBA, right? There's one thing you can count on with Sark's offense. I've been watching it for 3 years, studying it for 3 years. There's going to be a run in it. A run. Sometimes it's at the beginning of the game. Sometimes it's to start the game. Remember, we were upset the first year because he would go on these runs to start the game and get up by 21 points. The teams would come all the way back and then beat Texas. And we were like, what the hell, man? You got to finish the game. You got to play four quarters. And even last season, Texas was awesome. Made the college playoff. But what was happening? Sark would have these runs early on in the game, second quarter, have a run. Hell, sometimes it was late in the game. Remember the Wyoming game came in the fourth quarter, that run, and then they pull away from teams. But when that run happened early, what happened? U of H game, TCU game, K-State game. Teams had an opportunity to come back against Texas. So you can't maintain the run. It's like an NBA game. You can't maintain the whole damn game. But you can have that run where you separate. And what I think Sark needs to get with in terms of the complimentary football, CJ, and get with PK, is get with him and go, listen, when we get up big, we need to have a plan that when we get up by double digits, how we can close the door on an opponent, how we can suffocate them. Because they get up and it's the pass rush that doesn't get home enough, or it's the secondary that doesn't make enough plays, but you're up 2-3 scores. You got an opponent that's one-dimensional that don't even want to run the ball and couldn't run the ball, by the way, against Texas last year, and yet they're still able to come back and make it close in clutch time. That's not supposed to happen. So this season, I think part of it is complementary football. You need to come up with some packages, exotics, specifically built for that situation, CJ. When we get up, let's go for the throat, the jugular. And that, I think they need to consider that, because they didn't consider that last year enough.
No, I'm with you, but I'm also that was also one of my biggest critiques of Sarkisian as a game manager, as a play caller, as a head coach, is when to go step on the throat, when to know when to add the points, when to go for it. There were two instances to me, of course, that Houston game, Texas is up by multiple scores, and they call that fake punt, you know, or that fake field goal, and it doesn't convert. And all of a sudden, right after that, you're looking at a tie ball game. And it was a bizarre game because Texas dominated that first quarter. You know, it wasn't even remotely close what was going on the field on either side of the ball. And then, you know, instead of going up three possessions, you try to get cute and you don't get it. Now it's a one possession game. You get another stop. It's a tie game. You're sitting there thinking, well, we could have just been up 17 points if we kicked a 35 yard field goal. Maybe that's something that, you know, certainly flipped the momentum. You go back and you look at what was it, the BYU game where, or maybe it was the Kansas game, one of the home games, Texas, again, just dominating time of possession. But you look up, it's still a 10-point game deep in the third quarter. And you're sitting there thinking, well, I know we just got stuffed on the goal line for the last three drives, but maybe if we kicked a field goal and turned a 14-point game into a 17-point game or an 8-point game into an 11-point game, little things like that, I think, gives you a little bit more of a breath to work with if you're a head coach, a defensive coordinator, the offensive line, the quarterback. It gives you that buffer, that insurance, knowing that this drive isn't make or break right now. And ultimately, and for both games, it ended up working. But that's more to the credit of how deep the Texas team was and in the way they were able to win in so many versatile different ways. But that, to me, is what I'm going to be looking for this year in the SEC is, yeah, when you're able to take that extra score early on in the conference game, do it. There's nothing wrong with putting points on the board. At no point is that a knock. Of course, you know the time and places to be aggressive and to go for those kill shots. I applaud Sarkisian for his aggression early on in the first drives when he goes for it on fourth down on the 35 to 40-yard line. Love that. Sets the tone. It allows the offense to understand he's got confidence in them to cook. But also in those tight games when things aren't necessarily cooking for you, you know, just add the points. You know, that's a little bit to watch on for me with Sarkisian in 2024. And before we go any closer, I just want y'all to understand what I'm dealing with here. It's not looking great on the weather. I mean, I'm right in the heart of that. It's not the Wi-Fi. I got the box cooking right here. But man, it's lightning and thunder. I'm out here looking like I'm storm chasing from my bedroom. So I'm sorry, y'all, if I keep glitching in and out. It's not looking too great on the outside over here.
No, I got the same thing going on here, CJ, so it can happen to me too. But, hey, man, we're holding strong, so we appreciate you guys sticking with us despite the technical difficulties. All right, before we move on to another topic here, Archmania, love that. Appreciate the super chat. LOL says, how many of these teams are even going to be able to go deep on us with our edges? I think Sark is baiting them. He could be. Yeah, because they took Texas deep plenty of times in the spring game, early and often. So he could be baiting him on that. And you're right. This is what Sark says when Sark was asked about Trey Moore at the touchdown club. He said, Trey Moore is going to be a real problem. He's going to be a guy to watch this fall. After the spring game, he said their edges are going to be a problem for people. When Sark starts bragging about something, it makes me believe that he knows that's going to be a strength for him. And maybe that solves all these problems we're talking about with coverage. Maybe we don't have to worry about coverage this year as much because you're going to be able to collapse the pocket from the edge. And here would be one of my suggestions. This is one of them. When you do get up big in games, you got that early Sark run and you get up by two scores, three scores, whatever it is, come up with a NASCAR package. A NASCAR where you got all those edges you got, put them all on the field at one time. Move the bigger ones inside to play tackle just situationally and then put the speedsters on the outside and do what the New York Giants did to Tom Brady and just get after them because you're in the predictable passing situation. They got to throw it. They don't. If they want to run it, okay, go ahead, run it. You don't have enough time to run the football and get a 10-12 play drive and still keep up with Texas and with the way they're going to score, go right ahead. We'll take that. So I think the way teams beat you last year, they just threw it all over the field in their predictable pass situations and abandon the run. If they want to do that this year, get after them. Make them pay for it.
Rod, it's almost like we talked about Sarkisian having that 40-play script to begin games. It's almost like you need a script for your fourth possession just to show something new. You know, change it up a little bit. Come out in that pony package. Come out in a 22 look. Whatever it might be, just keep defenses on their toes because you know Sarkisian – early in games, especially last year, was able to go down the field, was able to put points on the board, and able to get out to these hot starts. What do you do to not get stale? What do you do to keep defenses from finding what works early in games and prevent you from not putting points on the board continuously each drive. Well, if you come out in the second quarter and you say, all right, yeah, we just showed you what we had for our first half, we're going to have something completely different. It's going to be dominated with Jaden Blue and Baxter in the backfield, Nye Black and Helm on the edges. Who knows what it might be? Maybe you go five wide. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, just completely change your game plan, but come up with a different look, show some different look, formations, some different motions, whatever it might be, but just have a different change up ready to go so that defenses can't come out with that second half adjustment that we've seen in years past and completely stalemate you from having any offensive success. That's ultimately been one of the biggest hindrances we've seen in Sarkisian's time at Texas is, yeah, it starts out great, but it doesn't finish great, or start out slow, and then all of a sudden he comes in and he has his adjustment, but it's never one of the same, except for Texas Tech and Oklahoma State the last two games of 2023, which might ultimately end up being a sign for what's to come in 2024.
Yeah, no question. Speaking of, I love you use the term stale. One of the comments from Sark at the Touchdown Club that he tries not to get stale and talks about how he looks to update and innovate every offseason. Studies the best offensive minds at the pro level, your Sean McVay's. He talks about the Shanahan, the McShanahan coaching tree, the franchise, the obviously Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, LaFleur, Mike McDaniel's now on that list as well. So I'm sure Bobby Slowick now is on that list as well. That list keeps growing. So that's what I love about Sark. He brings something new. I mean, every year he's been there, he's added something new. He added, 2 years ago, he added kind of the 6-0 line package, the Big 11, Big 12 package. His first year, he's the one that brought the pony pack initially. People don't realize the first series that Sark called, like the first series that he was the play caller and head coach at Texas, it was a pony package. It was 21 personnel. That's what made me fall in love with Sark. At first, I was like, I'm not sure about this Sark guy. And he came out in 2 weeks, I was like, hold up, man. This dude may know what the hell he's doing. Because I've been yelling for it for a couple of years. I've been yelling at Tom Herman, hey, man, play more of those two tailback sets. Sark does it on the first damn series. I mean, hey, man, it's man, he's a man after my own heart. Great minds think alike. So ever since then, I paid attention to stuff he adds. He adds a little bit. Last year, he added that cheetah motion that Mike McDaniels had improvised and had really popularized at the NFL level. So you can tell if you're studying football theory that he's snatching concepts from all over the place. And I can't wait to see what he's got in store this season. I guarantee it's going to be some red zone stuff. He's going to be trying to make sure that they got the red zone stuff right after what happened last season. All right, so we'll get back to some of the other comments from Sark from the Touchdown Club. I want to hit some of your questions. We'll do that too. But first, let's give a shout out to our wonderful sponsor, which we appreciate for your Wednesday night live stream here at On Texas. Let's get to here our friendy Andy Ludicky. Does a great job for us. If you're stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general, call Andy. He will take you through a process to help you find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call Andy or email him today at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. That's andy@myperfectfranchise.net. So thank you to Andy Ludicky for all of his support. We really appreciate it. All right, let's hit some questions here, and then we'll get back to some of the other comments from Sark. And I got a couple other topics I want to ask my man CJ about. But CJ, Tyrese wants to know, each team is allowed 3 players for SEC Media Days. Which 3 could you see Sark bringing? My guess would be yours, Banks, and Bender. Bender would be the surprise there to me, but he is a vet. He's a sixth-year vet on this team. What are your thoughts about the 3 players that would represent Texas?
Yeah, I mean, those 3 sound really good to me. Of course, Ewers, the face of your franchise right now, third-year starter. Banks figured to be a first-round pick, third-year starter, 5-star guys for both. Bender was also the first offensive guy that Texas brought out to the media this spring as well with Quinn. The 2 of them were the first 2 to talk with the media. Shows what they think of the 2 of them in terms of their leadership behind the scenes. Along with Benda, I mean, I could see Jahdae Barron making the trip again. He made the trip to Dallas last year for the Big 12 final media days. As for, a guy like Baron Sorrell, even, you know, he's a guy who's really, really involved, has been a great guy with the media as well. We'll see. But David Benda makes a lot of sense. Been around the program a number of times, figures to be a leader right now in the middle of that defense. It makes sense.
Yeah, you need a defensive person if you're going to take Ewers and Banks. I think both of those guys should go. Those are your 2 first round picks, projected first round picks in 2025. And Sark even said at the touchdown club in Houston that Kelvin Banks, I think he said, knock on wood, Kelvin Banks is going to be a top five pick. I totally agree with that. All the mocks and every big board you've seen basically says that Kelvin Banks would have been a top 15 pick even if he left 2 years ago after his freshman year. So, yeah, I can see easily that guy's going to be a top five pick. He'll get drafted if unless Quinn Ewers is the first quarterback taken, which he could be. Kelvin Banks could likely get drafted ahead of him. And I'll say this, I'm more confident than ever that Quinn Ewers is going to be a first-round pick now. I mean, it's if he's not a first-round pick, something went horribly wrong. After watching this last draft and watching how many teams are thirsty for quarterbacks, desperate for quarterbacks, and guys who would have been drafted either in the second round or even later, how teams are willing to look past any liabilities in their skill set or any negative data points in the evaluation just because they're that desperate for a quarterback. Because Bo Nix is a good player, and even Michael Penix. Those guys, a lot of teams were grading them out as guys who could have gotten drafted at the bottom of the first round or even later in the draft in the second round. But teams, because they're so thirsty for quarterbacks, they're willing to look past that because of the value of the position overall. I think, but Quinn Ewers, as long as you're in the top 3 to 4 quarterbacks in terms of that class, you're going to be a first-round quarterback going most likely going forward. And like I said, Something went horribly wrong for Quinn if he's not a first-round quarterback next year. Like Texas season went off the rails somehow.
I agree 100%. Especially, again, we saw how long of a drop route from pick 12 to, was it the 7th quarterback taken? Was it the 5th round for Spencer Rattler?
Yeah.
I mean, those guys go so quickly. And maybe 2024 was an anomaly because, again, 6 out of the top 12, I'm sure only 3 of those guys should have been first-round picks. I mean, you can make the argument Michael Penix wasn't a first-round guy because he's 25 years old. J.J. McCarthy, I know a lot of folks like him. I'm not huge on him. And then, of course, Bo Nix. Any other year, to me, Bo Nix is not a first-round caliber quarterback, especially coming from that Oregon offense, which really doesn't stretch the field very often. He throws under 10 yards per pass, about 60% of his attempts. So he's not stretching the field. He's not making tight window throws, and he's certainly checking the ball a lot more than any of these other quarterbacks in the class. Right now for Quinn, of course, the knock is, can you execute in the red zone? We know the deep ball took a step forward in 2023. We know that you can make just about every throw from 0 to 20 yards. I think he's doing well in his progression from his first to second to check down reads. Can you dominate games and be that guy? When you step on the field, you say, you're not going to beat me. I'm going to go out there and win football games. That's not always been part of Quinn Ewers' game. We've seen steps in that regard, but to be a top 2, top 3, top 5 pick, that has to be something that NFL teams recognize and see on a day-to-day basis. Right now, I see Quinn still in that first-round grade, but I certainly think for him to reach that ceiling of a top 5 guy, I mean – Oh, that's a good question. Theoretically, would Quinn have been a first-round guy this year?
Good question. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't see him dropping down. It's a Rattler drop down too. For sure, I don't see that happening.
No, because he has the age over Michael Penix. But again, Michael Penix dominated games in other ways. I didn't necessarily see Quinn do so. But also, you know, Quinn had 3 games last year where he didn't throw a passing touchdown. I know that he's still making impacts in other ways. You know, he's started to run the ball a little bit more. He's not turning the ball over as often as we saw in 2022. But still, to be a first-round caliber guy, to come in and be a franchise-changing quarterback, you have to have that week-in, week-out consistency that really only a few guys showed in 2023 in total. You know, you had Jaden Daniels, the Heisman winner. Caleb Williams won the Heisman in 2022. Those two guys, to me, were the no-brainers. Drake May, even then, a lot of inconsistency when it came to taking over games and really having, you know, those week-in, week-out performances that lead you to believe, yeah, this is the guy that I believe can go a top 3 pick. Quinn, I thought, had a better year in terms of consistency. But again, to my point, if you're going to take over games and show NFL organizations that you can be the face of the franchise, you have to see that each week. And right now, I would have had Quinn in the second round. I think that was a big reason why he ended up coming back in 2023. But 2024, or I guess in next year's draft, there should be no reason for him to fall out of the first 32 picks.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, Mel Kiper, I remember saying that he did not think he was a first-round pick this upcoming season. They were talking about this when he said he was coming back to school. And you're right. First of all, there are a few things that Quinn's got to work on. I agree with you. Taking over games, I call it putting the cape on. Right, you got to put the cape on every now and then and show him you're Superman. We saw a young Caleb Williams put the cape on against Texas as a freshman. Everybody went, okay, yeah, he's built different. He's built different. And every now and then, you need to show teams that you have that ability to be Superman. Put the team on your back and just do things that can't be quantified and that can't be game planned for or against. And he's got that kind of ability. And I've seen him put the cape on for a series or two, if a play or two, but for basically taking over a game and against a quality opponent. I think that's what we want to see too. We've seen him do it in the Oklahoma game. Actually, some of his best games have been in big games, but they want to see more of that from him. They also want to see him handle pressure better. One of the things that NFL scouts are looking at more is pressure to sack percentage. Quinn's pressure to sack percentage, for some reason, his pressure to sack percentage actually went up last season to 25%, and his pressure to sack percentage in 2022 was 13%. So he's not handling pressure as well. I think it's because he looks at the pressure, kind of stares at the pressure too.
Yeah, I messed up my stat earlier on Quinn. I said he had three games where he didn't have a passing touchdown. He threw a passing touchdown in every game. He had six in which he only had one. So to the point still remains, you know, you want to see more of him dominating games. We saw him put the cape on, Rod, to your point, in Alabama. And for those big games, more times than not, he shows up. Oklahoma, what do you do? Completed 19 consecutive passes after the first two turnovers. That, to me, is certainly how you take over games. It's all about consistency. We saw it in the Big 12 championship game. We saw it a little bit at times towards the back end of that Washington game. Of course, that drive leading to the final possession, final red zone look. I mean, that was probably the best ball Quinn's thrown all season, that little go route to Jordan Whittington, the diving catch as he went out of bounds. To me, you see spurts of it. It's all about seeing consistency.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It is all about consistency for him, but I think this is going to be a big year for Quinn, and I think if he can improve on the deep ball, which is the way he's worked on, improve on handling pressure better, kind of the pocket science of being able to buy himself time, get deeper into some of those progressions, and, yeah, just put the cape on in big-time situations against Michigan, against Georgia in those big games. I mean, I saw DraftKings said he had the second best odds tied with Carson Beck behind Shedeur Sanders to be the top pick in the draft in 2025. That's ultimately the goal for Quinn, and he should be a first-round pick. If he's not a first-round pick, like I said, something went horribly wrong because teams are willing to invest now more in quarterbacks who may not necessarily be complete quarterbacks in the first round. But if you have high level traits, which Quinn's got tons of those in spades, they're willing to take the chance on you, like a Bo Nix, like a Michael Penix. Michael Penix, with the injury history he had and his age, there's no way that guy will be a first round quarterback 3, 4, hell, 5 years ago. No way. But teams now are willing to look past all that. Now, it was the Falcons, probably the most controversial pick in the draft. But I think teams just willing to take more chances. How about this? I will wrap up this conversation here and move on to another one. How about this little nugget? Because you talked about how you had six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 and then the drop-off, and Spencer Rattler, the next quarterback taken in the middle rounds of that draft. Since, if you go look at it, from 2005 to 2014, NFL teams took 42 quarterbacks in the first two rounds, and they've drafted 41 in the last decade from 2015 to 2024. So it's still the same number. But where they're drafting those quarterbacks has changed. Over the past 10 drafts, 31 quarterbacks have been selected in the top half of the first round, top 16 picks. Only 18 were taken in the top 16 from 2005 to 2014. Meanwhile, you've only seen six quarterbacks taken in the second round over the past 10 years, which is down from 15 over the previous decade. So those quarterbacks who usually would be second-round guys, they're like, nah, man, we'll just take a chance on them. We'll draft them in the first round. And the value of the quarterback is getting pushed up more and more. And I think ultimately that's what we're seeing. How about this? we haven't seen a quarterback taken from picks 34 to 63 since 2020. Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they did. It's usually those quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts today would have got pushed up into the first round. They didn't push him up into the first round. They'd be like, nah, he's a first round guy. Because they don't draft him. If you're a second round guy, they might as well draft you in the first round because of the value of the position overall. It's crazy. All right. Well, there you go. Conversation about the quarterback position about my man Quinn. Here is a question here. And this is from Thunder Pup. I think it's a good one. Wants to know, can you manage an SEC team games and extended playoffs if you don't have depth to rotate? No, that is the plan for Sark. Sark has talked about that openly. And he even said at the Touchdown Club, we have to have enough depth to play. He's talking about getting the January 20th, which is the national title game. And to get that deep into the season, he says, hey, man, we got to play a lot of guys. He's saying playing the bulk of their roster in the first four non-conference games. So, man, I think that's what guys are going to prove themselves and earn the trust of the coaches, whether they are worthy of being in the rotation during conference play, which are the games that matter the most.
So. If you don't have depth, I mean, you better have one or two, you know, instant impact Heisman caliber guys to carry the load. I mean, we just saw LSU have no depth and rarely any talent on the defensive side of the ball and go 9-3 with the Heisman. So it's very tough. You know, it's one of those things where you'd almost like to have no one in that Heisman conversation if it means that everybody across your lineup is deep and talented, rather than that top end, you know, one or two guys that gets all the highlights, gets invites to New York, but you have plenty of holes across your defense. I think you go the route Texas has currently, shoring up the defensive line and the cornerback position, rather than having the Heisman and having a defense that can't stop cold or can't stop, you know, anything really.
Speaking of that, this is a good super chat from Tombstone 732. It is. Rod, could you honestly recommend Takario Davis leave Dwayne Aquina for current Texas DB room development? That's good. It's a good question. I think that's probably what Takario Davis was presented with. I think Dwayne Aquina probably laid out his resume of defensive backs he's developed in the NFL and probably pointed out to Takario Davis, who is projected to be a first round pick, that, hey, man, I have as good a resume as any DB coach in the country at developing high-level talent. He's a made man in a lot of circles on defense, NFL and college. And, yeah, I'm sure he played that card. Yeah, and I would not recommend – no, if I was talking to Zakario, man-to-man, I'd be like, hey, man. Now, I tell him to come to Texas because you can improve the secondary of Texas. You can start immediately, and you would play the bulk. You play the majority of all the cornerback snaps, and you would be. I think you're capable of being an all SEC defender, and you could come to Texas and prove that, and you'd be great. But could I guarantee that he's going to get better development at Texas than he would under Coach Dwayne Aquina, the guy that developed me and taught me all the football that I know? I could not. No, I couldn't do that.
Your nose would be lying just a little bit if that was the pitch that you had for him. I mean,
exactly.
No. You know, Aquina's a made man, like you said. So,
yeah, and you know, Blake Gideon is a guy who learned all that he knows pretty much from, you know, from a defensive standpoint, from Coach Aquina too. So, you know, he's got a lot of respect for him, and I'm sure that, you know, Coach Gideon's doing a great job there. We're talking about the cornerback position. I think that's more Coach Joseph. So, yeah, I couldn't do that. It's a good question. My man CB wants to know, how many stacks of papers are you looking at, Rod? Dude, you have no idea, CB. I wish I could pick this camera. Okay, there's a stack right here behind the computer. This is a stack behind the computer. This is Pony Package Notes and Empty Formation Notes and Combine Notes. Then there's defensive back notes about inside breaking routes and bunch formations and defending the deep ball. These are all the notes for the last three.
Rod, I want to see you at the end of this offseason, like week one. I want to see you just throw them all up in the air like a kid on his last day of school. Like, that's like everything from 2023, just throw it all up in the air.
Oh, dude, yeah, you can tell. Look behind me. I mean, that couch there—that's all. Organized notes there for you guys.
That's why you're the greatest, Rod. That's why you got all the points, got all the rabbit holes.
They call me Papers Babers.
Yeah, I like it.
In some circles. No, I mean, trust me. I would love to get all this digitized. I got too far behind, and now I basically need an assistant. I did, right. The whole truth. I do. My wife is like, you cannot claim that you're going green or you're an environmentalist. Thank you, Berto and Jordan. I know these are like my notes. Right? If you all go look at like great scholars, they'll like put their notes in like a library. Yeah, like Einstein's notes will be put in a library somewhere. These are my football notes, and I can't throw them away. And one time I was doing a remote CJ on Bevo Boulevard for radio, and it was a gust of wind. And I had all my notes. Oh, bro, it blew my notes all into the crowd of fans. And the fans were so gracious because they all know how obsessive I am about my notes. They gathered them up for me. And it was like, here, Robin, here your notes. It was one of the greatest moments of my professional career. Because that would have been like 2 years of research just gone, just in the streets of Bevo Boulevard, just out there for anybody. And they gathered most. I probably recovered 80% of those notes. And
that's crazy.
I thought it was gone, man.
You're probably suggesting you go out and move towards the woods, not for the privacy or the scenery, but just so you can go out there, chop a tree down and restack, your note taking. I mean, that's incredible stuff.
Hey, I got these binders. These are new ones. You know, I just got to buy these so I can take more notes. No, it's a problem. I realized I got a problem. That's why my wife built this office. I got to get out of there. She hated having notes all around the damn house, but I can't, at this point, I'm so far behind. I would have to hire literally an assistant to help me digitize all this stuff. I was going to say
August has to be your favorite month of the year, not because football's coming back, but you get all the back to school deals on all these the binders, the folders, everything, man. That's got to be incredible.
CJ, you have no idea, bro. You have no. I look so creepy walking through. They're like, man, this guy has a lot of kids. I'm like, no, I need these notebooks. These are my notes, man. Training camp's about to start. All right, that's enough. Thank you, my man, CB. CB always bringing the love. We appreciate it. All right, how about this? Daniel wants to know, hey, CJ, with staff going to Mater Dei on Thursday, are they going to try and make another push for Davison?
Yeah, I mean, this might be their last look at Jordan Davison before a commitment begins. Of course, he has an official visit locked in for June 21st through 23rd. But again, with the way that things are trending right now, Ohio State is the team to beat in my eyes. Texas, of course, has Ricky Stewart in the fold out of Chapel Hill in the 2025 class. And they're also making big head waves for James Simon out of Louisiana, who was on campus for the spring game, was impressed with what he saw from the Texas offense, not just the running backs. He looks like a guy that Texas is pushing for. Of course, Tashard Choice actually went and saw James Simon on Tuesday. So if it is a last, ditch effort to go get in front of Jordan Davison, that's a great idea. But with the way things are trending right now, I think he's going to be an Ohio State Buckeye, and Texas will be looking to add to their second running back in the 2025 class with James Simon.
Can we talk about the running back room just really quickly? I saw this little nugget since you're talking running backs here. I want to get your thoughts about this after the draft, but we talked about so much stuff that I kind of just lost track of things. But they set a record, or at least they had a milestone, I should say, more than anything. Texas became the second school ever to have the first running back off the board in back-to-back drafts. Alabama did it in 2012 and 2011 with Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram. And then Texas did in 2023.
I was going to try to guess that one. I was going to say
Mark Ingram. Sorry, my bad.
I think Derrick Henry was, 2013? He was three years even, maybe, after Mark
Ingram. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe it was 3 years in a row. It could have been. Yeah, you could have been.
No historian.
You might be right about that, CJ. I got to go back and look at that. I got to go back and check that out. I got that stat from somebody else, so you could be right about that. But it is it's interesting because if you look at the last 2 years, Tashard Choice has had now five running backs drafted. He can brag about having coached and developed the first two running backs off the board in the draft the last 2 years. But also Jahmyr Gibbs is thrown in there too because he coached him. Then you got Keelan Robinson thrown in there. And then, of course, you got Rojo. What position groups, position rooms in the country right now in college football are better or as good as that Texas running back room?
Let me dig through my notes because I actually wrote this down. I only got the one notebook. I got my paper down in front of me. I thought about this because I have the Texas running back room in the top five. I have it in the top five. And one of these rooms is a little different, I think, because you see it more on the go than others. It's any quarterback coached by Lincoln Riley. I think that you see them in, you know, the running for the conversation of the Heisman. Obviously, he's had multiple first round picks. Baker, you know, Kyler, Caleb Williams, Jalen Hurts. That's not a bad resume to boast at the moment. Like Spencer Rattler being only the one guy to drag that a little bit back. But hey, fifth round pick.
Did that drafted?
I mean, if that's the worst one, that's not too bad. I have Ohio State's wide receiving room.
I was going to go there.
That speaks for itself. I mean, the guys that they have in the league right now is tremendous. Brian Hartline doing a tremendous job in that. Iowa tight end room.
Girl, I mean, yes. Glad you went there.
That one doesn't get a lot of love, but I mean, my goodness, they get a lot of guys in the league, and they get them drafted very early. It's not just guys, you know, that you sneak in the day three at the very end. No. They're day two, potentially day one caliber
and
guys.
You know what's different, CJ? Because I went down that rabbit hole one time because I'm with you. I was like, man, it's crazy. We start looking at him. You're talking about Noah Fant, TJ Hockenson, Sam Laporta lately. He's thrown in that category too. But even before those guys, those are the most recent guys. Before that, you got Kittle as one of those guys. Brandon Myers. I mean, it goes on and on. This thing goes all the way back to the early 2000s. They have different coaches. This is there's an institutional program thing. Now, Lincoln Riley's quarterbacks are Lincoln Riley's quarterbacks. What's this wide receiver coach at Ohio State? I forget his
Brian
name right
Hartline,
now.
Yep.
Yeah, right there. He's a Brian Hartline. Tashard Choice running backs. But that goes before him, too, because I'll give Stan Drayton some credit for that as well. But that running back room is kind of more like the Iowa room for tight ends. It's been like four or five different coaches there doing it.
Yeah, no, it adds to how impressive it's been.
Yeah.
The last one I have, and I'm not sure if it counts anymore, but they certainly had a pretty good run back in the day. I know they just changed head coaches. They have a different scheme offensively now, but the Wisconsin running back room, at least over the last decade, was really good when you have Melvin Gordon, Monty Ball, a number of those guys. Not to the level in which we're seeing a Bijan, a Jahmyr Gibbs, even a Jonathan Brooks, with where these guys are drafted. But those guys behind that offensive line, I mean, they go up and run for 1,800 in their sleep every year. So that was my top five. And again, I don't think Wisconsin any more is in this conversation with the new head coach, with the new offensive scheme. It's more an air raid look. Really bizarre if you were watching any Wisconsin games a year ago to not see 22 personnel with a fullback in there. So that's what I had at the moment. So top four for me.
That's good, man. I'll add, because those are money, I'll only add maybe there's Ohio State edge rushers you can throw out there from what we've seen from them in the NFL. Yep. Maybe those LSU wide receivers now, because now they got another batch they just put out there with that group. So LSU wide receivers are developing that position room, developing a reputation too. But yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I just think Texas running backs are right there in that conversation. And what's the next position room for Texas? I think it's easy. What's the next position room for Texas that can establish that kind of culture?
Sorry, I had to mute myself. Stars scored in the other room, so I was hearing all sorts of changes going on. But I think you have to look at wide receiver, at least to me. You already have that start. You have three guys drafted, two in the top 50 picks, essentially, with A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy. You're going to replenish that this year with Isaiah Bond, maybe Silas Bolden as well. If that's 5 in 2 years, that's a hell of a start, especially when you consider Jonte Cook being eligible in 2025 with Matthew Golden. We know Ryan Wingo is kind of on that path for 2026 to be a top-tier guy taken off the board. Aside from that, I mean, I think you also have to look at quarterback. When you're in that first round 2 years from now, Arch Manning, you know, you get that cycle going every 2 years of throwing a really, really good guy into the draft at the top end. I like you, Corey. That's my thought process too. Great CB. Tip my cap.
QBs and wide receivers. Yeah, I was going to go QBs too. I like the edge rusher thing though. Honestly,
I don't hate it.
You got to start a pipe. We haven't started the pipeline yet though. At least with the wide receivers already started. You know what I mean? Quarterback, you can already see the ascent. You got a third-year starter, and then you got Arch right behind him. I need one of them edge rush guys to ascend. They got a lot of talent there, but I would say next year might be big. You might have multiple edge rushers drafted in next year's draft. Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke has big year, Trey Moore. You might have 2-3 edge rushers in the same damn draft potentially. Like that would be big for Texas.
That's a great place to have guys drafted at too. You know, that then tells you you're getting pressure after the quarterback. Your defense is, creating negative plays. I love that.
Yep. Premium position. That's no doubt about it. Helps you recruit more of those guys. And then Colin Simmons, in the future, that kind of stuff. Yeah, no, I'm really, I like that. Someone here said, oh, Cameron, how about this one? I like this one, Cameron. How do you guys feel about Santana Wilson's fit in our coverage scheme? Would he have made any difference in the spring game? I think he would have, and here's why. He loves playing press man coverage. I remember the conversation we had with him, and he talked about that was his favorite part of the game. And because he's an old soul, his father having been an NFL player, and he now NFL, you know, executive, this is a young man that studies the game and is a student of the game. And I remember talking to him about the different types of press coverage that he plays, and that's how I knew he was next level. Because there are different type, there are different techniques and strategies and tactics to playing press. You just go up there and play press. You can get the two-hand press, get the one-hand press. You can shoot the hands. You can bail on them. You know what I mean? You can inch out, the inch technique, as they call it. Some people call it the, you can do a check step. Oh, man, there's so many different. It's like I can go through this for like 8 to 10 minutes, all these different tactics and strategies that you can do in press coverage. And he is into that nuance of the game. Malik Muhammad is too. Malik Muhammad, I was impressed with him when he said in his media availability, when they asked him, hey, what parts of your game you got to work on? He said, well, I need to know where my help is. Oh, you know why he said that? Because he wants to know when I can cheat and when I can undercut this route and go make a damn play on the ball because I got help inside or I got help outside or help over the top. Such a savvy way to view the game. Santana Wilson would help. Because remember, think about how many times Texas would beat on just a boundary corner playing bump and run.
Right.
With flawed technique. Kobe Black got beat on one. Gavin Holmes got beat on one. It was just simple nine routes, just straight fly routes of guys having flawed technique and press. I think Santana Wilson's press technique is mature. It's probably ahead of schedule, more so than – Kobe Black's probably got more natural ability. But I think Santana Wilson has probably a little bit better evolved technique.
Yeah, he's a little bit more technically there early.
Yes, proficient, no doubt. Good question there, Cameron. I appreciate that. All right, a couple of other questions here. Someone said, I like this from Freshwater Cajun. Do you think Sark is so confident in our secondary because he thinks our pass rush is a lot better this year? There's no doubt. It was the last phase of roster construction. So he figured, now I got the talent in there, though, where I didn't have the talent before. Like I said, they've had 8 DBs leave in the last 2 transfer portal windows. That's a lot of DBs. That's
a lot.
That's a lot. CJ, to me, that's the DBs either getting the message or getting the hint. Hey, guys, y'all are just not our types. Y'all not our type of DBs. Period.
I think you're right. You had 6 in the winter portal. You had 2 more coming here. Those two probably more impactful than what you saw with the 6 otherwise combined, in my eyes. Of course, I'm sure Texas fans were expecting Jaren Thompson and Keaton Crawford to be jumped a little bit with Derek Williams. Of course, then you go out and you add Andrew Makuba, Jahdae Barron returns. Of course, Jelani McDonald makes steps up in his recruitment. And then you go out and you add 5 guys from the national signing period out of high school. Those guys, I'm not quite ready to say I'm fully confident in them when they're on the field. But you certainly have the basis for that depth and talent to maintain at high levels year in, year out. That, to me, is just as important as having the bodies ready to go. Because, again, you'll see Texas go to the portal to add, you know, complementary, you know, factors, pieces at any points. That safety room, as long as you have that continuity and guys that can communicate well with one another to prevent 75-yard touchdowns on the first play of the day, like we saw in the spring game, that's very encouraging to me. And that's all about playing with one another, having that that relationships built prior to the season beginning.
Yeah, no, good stuff there. Archmania, thank you for the super chat, Archmania, says, respecting Bobby's new censorship rules is keeping me from going scorched earth on a certain reporter at the Austin American-Statesman. Y'all know what it is. Hey, you know, we appreciate your discretion, Archmania. Thank you for the respect. We appreciate it because I got friends over there at the Austin American-Statesman. They're good friends of mine. I used to work with my man, Seti Bear, Sid Golden, Kirk Bowles, also a good friend of mine over there. So I'm sure you got to complain about it. And you can, they're used to it. Trust me. They get it all the time. I guarantee they get it all the time. But thank you for the super chat. We really appreciate that. Justin Yarbrough also with a nice super chat. Thank you very much, guys. We appreciate those. CJ wants to know which position group has the best chance to improve over the summer in training camp.
I like it.
It's a good question.
I mean, right now it has to be the cornerback room, right? That's the big question mark. I mean, you have Manny Muhammad, and then you have a pair of rotational guys with it being Gavin Holmes and Warren Roberson. I mean, what do you have from Santana Wilson when he comes in? Wardell Mack or Kobe Black take jumps up in their game over the summer? I would have to imagine that they at least get a little bit bigger and they get a little bit faster over the summer months and into fall camp. So right now, that to me, I think that's the position for me, simply because what we saw in the spring game was not inspiring.
No.
And because, again, you look across the board, I feel like every position on offense is in a great situation at the moment. You look at the defensive line, you've added two pieces out of the portal. You're looking and hoping to add another. Your edge room is expected to be a strength. Your linebacking room with Anthony Hill and David Benda is looking good, with Leon Glafau and Mo Blackwell also providing great depth and experience there. And your safety room, another place where you're expecting it to be a strength going into the fall. So to me, the cornerback room is the only one that's not been yet addressed out of the portal. And two, the biggest one with the, you know, kind of those biggest flaws coming out of the spring game. So that's my answer.
Yeah, no, you're the DB. There's definitely the most room for improvement in the defensive backfield. Like, I can't even pronounce the handle here, but he says, man, them boys need to start looking for the ball. That boy Terrence Brooks was all on Romeo Dunze's draft highlight. Yeah, no doubt. They got to start looking. They got to have a plan, all right? A plan. They were there, too. Let's think about it. They were there, but you got to have a plan to be able to make a play on the football. So, yes,
that
no
was
doubt.
Tough. And it wasn't just Romeo Dunze. It was Michael Penix. And then we saw Jalen Polk. And we saw Jalen McMillan. Oh, man. Yeah. Not right. A great day for number 8, and I'm sure Ryan Watts wasn't happy watching day 1 or 2 of the draft, seeing those highlights either. To that point, though, Ryan Watts, I mean, I tweeted about it after the game. Ryan Watts was in great position.
He was.
To the gripes of the many, and, you know, from conversations that we've had, I mean, it's one thing to be in position. It's another thing to make a play on the ball or the hands, and that's where these guys get in trouble more times than not. That was the biggest issue for Ryan Watts. Terrence Brooks, he just didn't have a great day.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And Ryan Watts, considering the length that he has too, you thought he'd been to make some plays on the football. But I think ultimately that's going to be the challenge for Texas even next season. If they're there now in the spring game, they weren't. They weren't even close.
Yep.
When you are there for the contested opportunity to make a play on the football, and that's what they got to do more of. So I agree with you on that. Real quick, I'll answer that question. We're just talking about the most improved room. I'm going to go tight end. I'm going to go tight end because what I saw from the tight ends, it was on a little sneak peek, but I like what I saw from the tight ends. I'm optimistic. I love the young kid, Jordan Washington. Amari Nyblack looks like he's going to be a different type of threat at tight end. And Sark loves him some Gunnar Helm. And they've been high talking about Gunnar Helm having a big year. And one thing that I think is understated, underrated, before we to kind of close this thing down, Texas football having tight end development over the last like 5 to 7 years. It's very underrated when you think about it. I just saw Cade Brewer got called up to the 49ers for a shot with the 49ers. Sanders just gets drafted in the 4th round. Jeff Swain is still in the league. I don't even know who Jeff Swain is playing for, but he's still in the league right now. Andrew Beck is a fullback, H-back slash tight end, whatever, for the Houston Texans. Jared Wiley, a former Texas tight end. Now with he was with TCU, excuse me, but now he's with the Kansas City Chiefs as a tight end. He's teammates with my man Xavier Worthy now. We've been underrating the tight end development at Texas. It's weird. It was like an endangered species forever. And you really couldn't get the production at Texas. Now you finally got that back with JT Sanders. But, man, this Tyrone Swoops, up until 2 years ago, he was still in the league at playing tight end. Like Washington, right. Some other teams. I think this is one of the underrated positions overall in terms of development at the NFL level is Texas tight ends. And you know what? I'm going to throw out there, I guess, Gunnar Helm and, you know, Amari Nyblack kind of following that tradition. Guys who may not necessarily – I think be headline players here at Texas, but end up going to the NFL and being evaluated as guys who can play at the next level with the tight end position. So I didn't realize Texas had that many tight ends until I started looking it up, that they had that many tight ends in the league right now.
Yeah, no, it sneaks up on you. Yeah. I mean, I probably wouldn't have been able to name all of those names at the tight end spot. It certainly doesn't feel like, at least during their time in Austin, that would have been the case. So
exactly,
there might be a case to that. So
it's weird. I don't even remember really the impact that Tyrone Suess played quarterback. You go look at it, and Jared Wiley ended up transferring. You go look at Kate Brewer. He was a good player, but not necessarily a great player. Andrew Beck was mostly a blocker at Texas, and then goes to the league. So was Jeff Swaim, and so they have maybe an elite trait at Texas that ends up translating to the league. So good for those guys. I was doing some research and figured that out. Ken, before we get out of here, Ken has a super chat. Thank you, Ken. He said, I have a question for CJ. After you guys started working together, have you watched some old Rod's old games? Look up, guys. Oh, man, I know he ain't done that to them. It's hard because, first of all, it's in regular definition. Ain't no high definition back then. So it's all weird.
Rod, you're going to be mad at the game I watch. You're going to be mad. It was It was that Cliff Kingsbury Wes Welker game.
Ah, come on, man! You can find a better one than that.
I know. That's on me. I saw the stat line. I saw what you were talking about because we brought it up a few times.
Yeah, man.
I was like, I got to see what was going on in this game. So
they was dealing, wasn't he? They was dealing.
Yeah, no, he can sling it. That's for sure.
I respect Cliffy after that, no doubt. He ain't just a pretty boy. All right, before we get out here, Ryan wants to know, Rod B, favorite barbecue place. One in Houston, CJ, favorite barbecue place in Dallas. Favorite barbecue place in Houston, Pinkerton's is really good. I believe Pinkerton's is in H-Town. Pinkerton's is really good. I've been there a couple of times. Austin's got a lot of good barbecue, but I used to like Valentina's a lot. I know they're having some issues now, but Valentina's is good Tex-Mex barbecue. CJ, what about you, barbecue in D-Town?
Yeah, Dallas, not really in downtown, but you go up north a little bit to McKinney, go to Hutchins Barbecue. The family loves it. I love going up there. It was a good spot back in the day when I was still living in Allen. So that was a good one. And we always made the trip down to Austin. We'd stop at Stubbs. I like that spot. Go catch a concert, some live music. Good spot for me. So those are my two.
Yeah, don't forget about Terry Black's down here in H-Town, man. Love us some Terry Black's, too. A lot of good barbecue to choose from. We told you about the Dominique Williams recruitment. I guess we can end the way we started this thing. CJ, for those who want to know about the update on Dominique Williams, we should know within the next, 48 to 72 hours here, right?
Yeah, I would say even shorter than that, probably the next 30 hours.
All right.
I'm expecting a decision on Thursday this week. Of course, he just wrapped up his visit to LSU. Kenny Baker expecting to get one last visit with him, whether it be tonight or early morning. We'll see if they're able to get some FaceTime together with each other. But, of course, four visits, Missouri, Oklahoma, LSU, and Texas. I expected the decision to come down to LSU and Oklahoma and Texas. Those three finalists right there, Texas feels confident, Oklahoma feels confident. And, of course, Bo Davis and LSU just had the final visit with Dominique Williams. And, of course, tomorrow will also be the visit to campus for Javian Cole, the cornerback out of San Jose State, who really talented ball player if you've not yet seen his film.
Yeah, good stuff there, CJ. All right, before we get out of here, one more shout out to our sponsor for our Wednesday night live stream. We really appreciate Andy Ludicky and all of his support. If you're stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general, call Andy. He will take you through a process to help you find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call Andy today or email him today at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. That's andy@myperfectfranchise.net. Thank you very much to Andy Ludicky for all of his support. All right, and thank you very much to all of you guys for joining us tonight. Really appreciate your participation. CJ, appreciate you, man, working through all of the storms and the surges. Hey, CJ, he battles through, man. He's a fighter. That's why we appreciate him.
It's pretty dark out here, not because it's nighttime, so I'm glad this the internet held up for the back half. And Rod, of course, you and your pile of notes helping us get through another show tonight.
Exactly. That's why, hey, CJ, no BS. That is why I started writing these notes too, because the internet would fail me while live on radio. I would be trying to read something and then I couldn't pull it up, or I have a glitch or something. And I was like, I can't go on radio like that. you know, and be depending on the internet, which might fail me at any time. So I decided I'm gonna write it down, and that's where it all started. And then from then on, I am now an enemy of the forest.
That's good stuff. Thank you, Archmania. I'll put my helmets on, get under the bed, and in the tub if I need to.
Worries. CJ, you stay safe. All of you guys out there, y'all stay safe too. Thank you guys for joining us. Love that we keep expanding the On Texas Football community. Like and subscribe. We appreciate you guys all the time. Also, shout out to my man, Matthew. Matthew does a great job for us behind the scenes. He is the real MVP. Can't happen without him. That's the reason that it looks so good, sounds so good. So thank you to Matthew. Thank you to Andy Ludeke for all of his support. And until next time, guys, hook 'em.